Like the show? Want to listen to episodes early? Consider becoming a patron. Starting at the $3 a month level, patrons get access to a custom patron-only feed where we put out episodes of upstairs studio podcasts like the Childcare Bar and Grill, Miss Becky's Classroom, That Early Childhood Nerd, the Renegade Rules podcast, and others early. That feed is just for patrons. You could be one of them. Go to patreon.com/playvolutionhq or click the link in the show description to learn more. Childcare Bar and Grill podcast. Jeff Johnson here with Brett Schneider and Lisa Murphy.
Hello.
Brett,
hi.
Brett, see how you've been on the show? This is your third time, and now you've got top billing over Lisa Murphy?
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
like it's a Brett sandwich.
Yeah, well, no, I'm just thinking when it's time to put Lisa out to pasture.
I can step in, don't worry.
You can step in. We'll put that in my exit strategy.
The exit strategy. hey, listeners, we're going to play another round of the top five game, as you could probably tell by looking at the episode title. We're going to do top five loose parts for outside play. The way we play the game is we each make a list of our top five, then we count down from five to one. If you're playing at home, pause the recording now and make your list, and then you can just pause and read your answers at the appropriate time. We should put some sort of ping in here so people know when to pause. We used to have those books on tape for kids. We should really do a live version of this and just invite the world to play one sometime and see what we end up with. So, Lisa Murphy, your number five loose part for outdoor play.
Are those like big leaves? Big leaves. I don't know. Don't ask me what kind of tree it's from.
The big leaf tree.
The tree with the big leaf.
Yeah. How
just
big
leaves.
Are... How big
leaves
are these
in general,
leaves?
But no, like the huge ones that like are as big as your head, and some, you know, obviously they're green sometimes if like a branch falls down, but then in the fall they're all the fall colors.
Is this a Florida leaf you're talking about?
Oh hell no.
Okay, well, I didn't know if it was. No. I just didn't know if you were.
No, like a big. I don't even know the names. I don't. They're a New York State leaf. How's that? An upstate, a New England leaf.
Yeah.
Here I got palm fronds. I'm not playing with the palm fronds.
Oh, I would totally play with those. You can build forts out of those suckers.
After you get bit to death by the ants living inside of them. No, I'm talking New England leaves. Big.
Okay. New England people, if you know that leaf that Lisa Murphy's referring. Brett, do you know the leaf she's talking about?
I don't know that I do.
I'll Google it while you're talking.
I mean, New Hampshire is pretty much made of leaves, so...
Yeah, we've got all the leaves.
You got all the leaves.
Maybe all
the leaves. So many, I'm not noticing the biggest one.
Brett, what's your number five?
My number five is buckets.
Buckets? What do you do with the buckets?
You can fill them, you can dump them, you can drag them, you can stack them.
I like buckets, and my experience, they're truly... there's stuff you can do with buckets inside, but outside, the bucket world is your oysters. That doesn't make any sense. You could literally fill the bucket with oysters if you're in the right place. Yeah, hauling and dumping. We as adults tend to relax a little bit more about hauling and dumping when it happens outside, I think. And so, mm-hmm. So buckets are a great one. My number five is I expanded from the leaves to the whole tree.
The whole tree.
My list is all. I'm taking Simon Nicholson very literal in his suggestion that loose parts are variables in the environment. And so my loose parts are trees, because you have those big giant leaves and you have the seed pods and you have flowers and you can climb them and you can play with sticks. And so I guess my number five is trees and all tree byproducts. I was thinking about this the other day, and when I was growing up, we had a big maple tree in the backyard, actually not as big now as I thought it was then, but I played with my little Hot Wheel cars around it, right? And there was one place, there was this surface root, and I spent, I don't know, it felt like days and weeks digging tunnels under some of these roots so I could drive my little cars under and through the tree roots and everything. So even the roots of the trees can become variables in that play environment. So my number five, trees. Lisa Murphy, number four.
Big mango pine cones.
Big mango.
Northern California. Big mango pine cones, as big as your head, just like the leaf. The
I'm seeing a pattern here. Lisa's big fan of big things.
I am. I would when I was in Northern California, and I would bring them after I'd moved to New York, and I would put them in my suitcase after visiting my grandma, and I'd bring back the huge, like the size of watermelons. Oh, I love those things. And what most people don't know, and I'll tell you anyway, I'll give you the secret. If you put them in a big bucket of water, your bucket, Brett, they fold up. They fold up. All pine cones do this. And then if you take them out, then of course, as they sit in the sun, then they'll open back up again. A lot of people don't realize that.
That's fun.
It is super fun, especially the first time you notice it and you're like, oh my God, what happened? How'd that happen?
What happened to my pine cone?
Right? But it was really cool the first time it happened, because then the kids, of course, hypothesize, right? They're like, so we're doing science right now all day. Is it going to do it again? Get a bigger one. Get a smaller one. Is it going to happen again? Are they all going to open up? How long did it take to open up? Oh, it was literally one of the most organic science investigations I've ever.
Would the pine cone do that with just enough humidity? Like if I hung one in the shower and just left the shower on full blast, would it?
I don't know. I didn't try it. You try it and let me know.
Jeff has plans for the weekend.
And a water bill to go with it. I'm in Florida. I'll just hang it out here. I'll just hang it out on the patio. And it took 2 days. And
my weekend was going to be walk the dogs and drink some whiskey, but now I've got a whole nother thing to go on that's a little bit more productive. So that'll be great. Pine cone experiments. Brett, what's your number four?
Ropes.
Rope. That's dangerous. They could strangle.
Not if you watch them.
Oh, okay. So what do you would talk more about rope?
Well, you could build with it. You could use it to hold things together. You could use it to drag things. You could use it to represent something else. You can do anything you want with a rope, I guess.
Tie up a friend.
Why not?
I think rope is great, and I've told the story of the podcast before, but it's been a couple hundred episodes probably. Visiting a forest school up in New Brunswick, kids were playing with rope, and the whole game, they had a shed with all their, essentially loose parts. And so these kids, and this is like 100-foot long hunks of rope. And the whole game was to chase my wife Tasha around and catch her and tie her up. And these kids, this was their play space. And so they were running through the space like gazelles, because they knew where every root was and every pine cone and everything they forgot to put away. And so they had that advantage to her. And it was probably 45 minutes, an hour and a half of just complete glee for the children and Tasha. And then when we got to the hotel that night, it was really easy to get her down to sleep because she was so exhausted. they really wore her out. So it was great. And I love rope. I mean, doing things like using it tying it to the top of the slide and using it to climb up the slide like you're Batman and that kind of stuff. There's so much good that can come from rope play. And I think programs get scared of rope, or are scared away from it because of licensing sometimes, because everybody's going to strangle on everything all the time,
right,
in some people's mind. But I think rope is a great one. My number four, hills and slopes. Mm-hmm. Are great variables, loose parts in the environment. And Brett kind of touched on this in the last top five we did with her. It's great because there's so much experimenting that can go on with hills and slopes. You're climbing, you're using your body different, you're rolling down them. A slope, an incline is a simple machine, a wedge. And so there's a lot of experimenting that can be done. And I like the natural ones, but I also like the man-made ones. Things like access ramps out in the outside can be used for doing experiments with and ramp play. So I like inclines and slopes as loose parts outside. Lisa Murphy, what's your number three?
Shells for collecting
the big ones.
Yeah, and the little ones. All of them, actually. All of them.
Well, let me get this straight. You're into big leaves, big pine cones, but all sizes of shells.
All sizes of shells.
No, it's talk about it. It's great. I love shells.
I like to use big half like clam shells for scoops in the sensory tub and in the sandbox. I like to use them for manipulatives, counting, sorting. Because children will always, they're going to do that. You don't need to have a sorting day. It doesn't need to be on your lesson plan. You provide them and children will start to make patterns out of them. I've seen them used as money currency. I've seen them used as like, we need some food for the kitchen area. And actually I'm sitting at my kitchen table right now, but across is a tray. I get a sense, like they're aesthetically pleasing. I won't mix the words. So, I mean, I have a tray of shells. Almost every single one of them has a story of where I found it, and I like them. They're little, like little memories, little pieces of memory.
Yeah. Yeah. Big fan of shell. I love the idea of using them as scoops, those big beefy shells. Some of them are too delicate for that, but yeah, those big,
like an abalone, a big old abalone shell.
Yeah.
Conch shells where it's like the spiral inside and you fill it with water or sand and how do you get it all back out?
Mm-hmm.
Pom-poms in them and other materials.
Yeah.
Shoving up your nose, making beads out of them with a real fine drill bit. You can actually work with kids and make beads out of shells. And
sometimes you can find them already.
Yeah,
when you'd be at the beach, it's like today you got to find one with a hole because you want to make a necklace.
Yeah, so the pre beaded shells. Yeah, no, they're great, and I think we have we've got a lot of shells around too because Tasha was really into that too, and I myself as well. I mean, it's like, oh no, we've got 40 of that kind. We got, and I'll be always being on the lookout for the different things, and so yeah, shells are great. What's your number? We're on three. What
three.
Are we on three? What's your number three, Brett?
Water.
Talk about water.
It is liquid.
It's wet.
Open-ended. It can freeze too, I guess. So you can see all those different parts of it. It's fun to see how things change outside when they get wet. Kind of like with the pine cone.
Yeah, and I mean, water is one of the, well, most of these things are things human children have been playing with for as long as there have been human children. So there's almost a symbiotic relationship that humans have with just about everything that's been listed so far. We're wired to interact with and therefore learn from these things. And water is huge. And you don't have to plan water activities. You just make it available and kids will figure out what to do with it.
Mary Rifkin called all of these things that we're saying, like that was our first toys, you know, they're the child's first toys.
Yeah.
And they're free.
And I think water is outside. I think adults relax a little bit more with the rules for water play outside.
Of course, so
it frees kids up to do more real play and exploring and go deeper with it because we're not there hovering worried that it's going to get spilled and that we're going to have to deal with the wet carpet or whatever. So water is great.
I love going, there's a brook out in our woods at school, and we'll go see that, you know, throughout the year and seeing when it's high, when it's low, when it's like easy to walk through or hard, or what we can find in it, and all of those variables.
Do you have water? I imagine it freezes. Sorry. Does yeah. it freeze? Yeah.
Does your brook have water all year long, or does it dry up during the summer, or?
I don't think it ever gets fully dry, but it'll get pretty low.
Pretty low.
Probably this year it's dry because we've had a drought. But
yeah, how deep does it get when it gets deep?
It depends on what part you get in. We've had kids who have hopped in up to their waist in water, which was a fun surprise in the ice. Or, you know, sometimes it's just like ankle deep, but we also, you know, talk about like proper gear with the kids, and we encourage them to have rain suits and stuff like that too. So if you have a good rain suit, you can get all the way in on a fall day and come all the way out dry still.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. When visiting in Australia, we went to visit a program that did a day at the river. I think they went like twice, a couple times a week with their group of preschoolers, and it involved a van ride, and you got to walk across the farm field and down the big hill, and there's just this little low spot along the river that the guy in charge of the farm would put out a little marker so the kids knew how far they could go, and they're reaching in and they're digging out rocks, and it's probably for most of them not much more than knee deep in most places, and I depending on the year, but there's the wild critters around, and it was just a great experience in that natural water environment, and then all the fun things we can do with it when we as humans contain it. I mean, just the garden hose on a slow trickle mm-hmm. is amazing, and water balloon fights, and there's
kiddie pools and sprinklers.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we could do a whole top five of water play ideas if we wanted to sometime in the future. My number three, critters. Just all the critters, all the from mammals and reptiles and the wiggly worms and the bugs and all the critters out there, because there's just so many of them. And we always work to figure out ways to invite more critters into the play space, whether it was bird feeders or whatever, just so that make sure there were rocks or logs for bugs to hide under, and worm bins that we were feeding composted stuff from lunches and stuff. So critters were always a big one, and up to and including dogs and chickens. Mm-hmm. So that's my number three. Lisa Murphy, what's your number two?
Rocks.
Rocks.
Big rocks.
Small big rocks. Yeah.
All the rocks.
All the rocks.
I like all the rocks.
When does a rock become a, when does a pebble become a rock?
That's a very good question. Mm. When does a pebble become a rock?
Huh. I'm sure somebody that ran a gravel mine would know that, but I don't. Brett, do you know?
No.
I'm sure it's do you really think that that's a thing, like is there a classification system, like there's some kind of image?
Like a physical size, or maybe a weight?
That would be my guess, is some kind of size or weight.
Oh no, well the gravel places, the rock places, actually have these rock strainers.
I was going to, yeah.
They're these big metal things. The big bucket will come along and it'll dump things over. And the rocks that fall through are of whatever size they're going to call it. And so they've got different sizes of these. And so you put them through one and you get your 9-inch and smaller rocks. And so they do sort them that way. So I don't know what
cool.
the technical is. But yeah, so I mean, I could go to my rock guy and maybe I needed a truckload of 9-inch rocks, or maybe I needed a truckload of 12-inch or bigger. And so, and then they'd bring me the dump truck full of the right stuff.
That's kind of cool. Well, harder. Some of the same reasons as shells, you know, stacking, the texture, the color.
Yeah. Look different when you get them language. Wet.
Yeah. I love that.
Yep.
And
heavy.
Then, yeah. And I
the moving of them around.
Yeah. I love the heavy. I love the fact that you can smush a finger or a toe with them.
Of course.
I've seen that.
And I think we need to, I mean, we worry about that, and we you can't play with the rocks, but that is one of the benefits. We need to see the smushed finger. And again, I don't want a smushed bloody finger that they can never use again, but the little pinch of the toe or finger is a
life lesson.
Life lesson. And it's an encouragement to practice being careful.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you don't learn how to be careful with the tool, regardless of the tool, whether it's a cheese grater, whether it's a pair of scissors, or whether it's a rock, if you're constantly being not allowed to interact with the thing.
Yeah, so I'd prefer that interaction to start early and often with kids, because if you don't learn that dropping a rock on your toe might hurt until you're 15.
A little late.
I'm just thinking maybe it would be beneficial to have it happen earlier.
Which yes. is not to say that we're having today, we're practicing. Today, everybody's going to drop a rock on their foot, right? That would be stupid. But when it happens organically, it's definitely an opportunity for learning, growth, conversation, or whatnot. But you don't have, drop a rock on your foot week.
I would love to visit the program.
We had a little boy get a rock dropped on his fingers, and it hurt. And he lost the nails, but they grew back and everything. But his favorite thing were his middle fingers. So he just got to flip everybody off.
Look what happened to my middle finger.
It didn't happen to both of them, did it?
Yeah. We had one friend with a shovel leveraging the rock up, and then he went to, grab a critter, look at it, something, and it slipped. Accidents happen, And it just happened, those middle fingers.
But, well, I guess they are just a little bit longer, so yeah. It was just a tip. That is amazing. That is great. I like that kid. And so did he quit playing with rocks?
No.
Did he?
No, he still does it. His friend with the shovel still does it.
Guessing he's never lost another nail again, has he?
Learned I to be think a little... he's done all right.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
Most of even just that's fun, watching a fingernail grow back.
Yeah, seeing the purple underneath and then the whole process it goes through. And
how everybody poking at it because it's so tender. Talk about STEM learning. That's
great.
Well,
anytime someone else has your finger, you get a good excuse to flip them off.
That's great. All kinds of learning going on with rocks, including the purpose of the middle finger. That was number two. We're at number two.
Yes.
My number two, wind and air.
Ooh. You and skipped so, Brett.
What?
You skipped huh? Brett.
You did. That's okay.
Oh, no, I thought you were.
I said rock.
You said rocks. I'm sorry, Brett, go ahead.
Oh, I said mud and dirt.
Mud and dirt. Mud absolutely. And dirt. What's your favorite kind of mud? What's your favorite mud texture?
I like when it's like really ooey gooey, like you sink in. Like it's fun, but so frustrating when it pulls your boots off.
Yeah.
When you can like kick it up against a wall and make mud paintings.
Yeah, just that
sticky, yucky, that almost, and it'll like dry up and crust onto things.
And see that I like that that opposite. I like the real ooey slimy stuff, and then I like the look of it when it's dried up. That crusty and it cracks and stuff, and it starts flaking, like that.
Dusty.
And I guess everything in between. You can't go wrong with mud. Why are so many? It seems like there's a lot of early learning settings that are mud adverse.
Some do mud. There's like a National Mud Day too, though.
Yeah, but some of those programs, that's the one day a year that they play with mud.
Which is why I'm not a proponent of it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess I'd rather have kids have that one day instead of none days. But
why tease them? And then you see all these freaking online posts about how everybody had such a great time. Everybody had, there was no crying. Everybody was getting along and da-da-da. Why would you not want to harness that for the rest of the year? Oh,
So Mud Day becomes it's just Tuesday. It's just
Monday through Friday. On Tuesday we do mud. No, every day. But again, let me go back to what I said, is that it's not necessarily that we're making an announcement. It's that due to the nature of our program, there's water and there's dirt, which means there's going to be mud all the time. Not as something special, not as something planned. It's just something we have here.
It becomes like what we want to happen with rough and tumble play. It's just one of the things that happen. I love me a good mud kitchen, because there's so much science-y learning going on there, but as well as the social stuff, because there's all the planning and arguing and bickering and decision making, and it's just delightful. I mean, we talked not too long ago, we did an episode about learning centers, and you could do nothing in your preschool years but play with mud and dirt and walk into the first day of kindergarten with everything you need to know. And I just wish more people would then embrace it as a thing. That. Would trust it. Yeah. Yeah. Mud and dirt are great.
And the kid is washable, I feel like.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
The adversity can be to the mess, but kids are washable. So are clothes.
And yeah. And we can plan and prepare for that, right?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, and I think adults often will forget that kids are fully capable of doing that their own selves. You know what I'm saying? It might take a little longer than if you got them all transitioned and into fresh clothes and all of that. But children, as they get older, can figure out how to take off the muddy clothes and put on fresh clothes.
Yeah.
And if we truly value the entire play process, we see that the time spent doing that is still time invested in a child's growth and development. And I think all too often we see that time as time away from the lesson or the curriculum or the teaching piece of the day, and then and see it as something different instead of just a fluid part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. What's mud play look like in your program, Brett?
We do it a lot. We have a mud kitchen, which is so fun. We're hoping this year to even like next door, because right now the mud kitchen has been more of like a sand slosh kind of a kitchen. So we're hoping to get like real dirt to like mud it up. And we've got some good muddy spots that we can find too out in our woods and all of that. It's just whatever you can do with it. Why not? It's just fun.
Well, there's a use for your buckets. The kids hauling exactly. those buckets of dirt back to the mud kitchen.
The potions you can make with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking if you were walking, like if you strategically placed a smaller mud kitchen, like randomly in the woods. And if you imagine like you're walking along and you're like, whoa,
something to discover.
Look at this. Who lives here?
That would be a mud kitchenette.
Right. Thank you. Thank you. A portable.
So my number two was wind and air. I love helping kids notice or allowing them or creating an environment to support them noticing the movement of wind and air, whether it's watching the big leaves blow on Lisa's favorite trees or soap bubbles or just the little bits of flagging tape or ribbon blowing in the air and flying kites and all that kind of stuff. Moving just the feeling of a warm breeze on their faces when they're little, that sensory interaction with the air. And it's something that we don't always maybe pay attention to as much as we do some of the other things that are going outside. And so that's kind of why I like that.
Running with the wind behind you.
Yeah. Forward. Yeah. Or just when you're on walks, walking into the wind with kids sometimes we've got this wind blowing across the plains out here where you've got to lean into it to keep moving forward. And that's an amazing experience when it's especially brand new to you when you're 4 years old and there's a blizzard going on. So I think that's delightful. Nothing like some good wind play.
Comment on what you said about the adult who might need to point that out and not as a lesson, but taking the time and modeling that little small thing can be appreciated, right? That there's an inherent appreciation to something that is so natural and that we're not needing to hurry up and get through this to get on to the other side of something that I might deem as more important. Because children will then believe that you really appreciate it when they stop and see that you're consistent in taking a big breath. Do you feel that on your face? Like, oh, I didn't feel it. Now I'm feeling it on my face. And now I'm going to be a 3-4-year-old who's more inclined to stop and feel it also on my face.
Yeah, you just made me have, you know how you, I mean, most of our experiences like this have turned into stories and presentations, right? Lisa Murphy, those moments that just stick with you from your classroom time. I don't know if I've talked about this before. I'm sure I have. My Annie, who, I mean, in family childcare, came to us from as an infant, loved the girl when she was about, you know, when they were little. So we had this big honey locust tree in the yard. And one of the things I like to do is just lay down on the grass and watch the tree move. And it moved different on different days. If it was just a gentle breeze, there'd just be this little bit of movement. On windier days, the branches were swaying back and forth. And for her, it got to be such a thing. I mean, we started doing that when they were like two. She must have been about four. And it's like a beautiful June afternoon. And she says, Jeff, let's look at the tree. and all the other kids are busy doing their things, and they're climbing the apple tree, and they're digging in the hole and this kind of stuff. And we just laid there together, holding hands, or just little fingers, just touching my hand on our backs, watching the tree, pointing out birds and this kind of stuff. And it's just this magical kind of interaction with nature, kind of personal interaction kind of thing that makes me teary-eyed missing her, thinking about it now that she is, what, about to turn 14? So those moments are sticky. And I think that maybe harkens back to our discussion on the top five reasons to play outside. I think that might be one of them. So we got to move on before Jeff has any more feelings. Lisa Murphy, you're number one.
Sticks. I like sticks.
You can poke an eye out with that.
You can. You can poke a dead animal with it. You can poke your friend with it. You can build stuff with them. You can start fires with them. You can use them as swords. You can use, I love sticks.
Sticks are delightful.
I like the trees. I like the trees. I also like that they gift us sticks.
Yeah. That's one of those tree byproducts that I was so such a fan of. And again, they're like mud play. There are stick adverse programs out there that teachers will go out on the out in the yard and make sure that the sticks get thrown over the fence if there was a little bit of wind the night before, so that the kids can't get them. And so then there's kids just pawing at that fence, trying to
climbing the fence
and pull a stick through the. I mean. My God, it's insane.
Why are you so threatened by the stick?
Well, it's all about could. The fear of could.
And that one time.
Yeah.
Yeah, one time. 20 years ago, somebody got a cut.
Yeah. And I love them of all sizes. I mean, from the tiny little toothpick-sized ones that they use as decorations for their mud pies to the log-sized ones. I mean, we'd have these almost 20-foot long.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so sticks are great. Britt, what's your number one?
Very similar. I said also trees and tree byproducts.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Like the tree cookies and like sticks as well. Or we have some great stumps that are fun for playing on. Like, you know, like they still have like the roots showing and stuff. Or like the big trees that have fallen over for playing on are trees that produce like apples and stuff that you can find, eat, play with.
Yeah. Yeah, all that you mashing the groundfall crab apples and that kind of stuff. I've visited a handful of programs that have the hollow log big enough that the kids can crawl inside of and through. And I mean, and hearing the stories about how they acquire those is great, because Kristen up in at Butterfly Hill up in Minnesota, hers, I think there are some people associated with the church that the program is at, and they hauled it out of the woods with ATVs and everything and got it in place and have put oil finish on it to keep it from deteriorating too fast. And so there's just so much going on with trees and tree byproducts. I think it's absolutely great.
I loved that in my community up in New York, like word spreads, like you're like, oh, you know, that's the lady that collects that kind of stuff. Uh-huh. And I went to the program one time and somebody in the night had dumped tree stumps over the yard. Like, and it was like, yeah, I heard you could just dump them over the fence and she'll use them. And it was like Christmas, you know, you're like, oh, yay.
Yeah. And that person saved $100 from they would have to pay to haul them to the landfill. So everybody wins.
Everybody wins.
Yeah, I mean, I had neighbors cut down a big tree a block and a half away, and I took my two-wheel cart home and hauled things home, because it was just easier than putting them in the back of a pickup and driving them there. So yeah, can't go wrong with stick and stick byproducts, tree and tree byproducts. My number one, gravity. Now I understand gravity works inside, but I think there's a lot more fun you can have with gravity outside. All those trees gift their byproducts to us through gravity. I mean, that's how we get the groundfall crab apples and the sticks and the leaves and all that kind of stuff. Playing with gravity, when kids are jumping outside, they jump off of something, they always go down. They never float up into the air. Rolling down hills is so much easier because of gravity. Imagine zero gravity environment. You try to roll down a hill, you just stay there. So all the dropping and throwing and kicking and all the gravity related stuff that can go on with outside play is great. And I know, and again, it goes back to Nicholson. Nicholson talked about loose parts are variables in the environment. And I think gravity is one we don't maybe pay attention to as much as we could or should. And so number one is gravity for me. Any other final thoughts or concerns before we wrap this one up?
No, this was fun.
This was kind of a fun one. Appreciate it. Thanks for joining us, Lisa and Brett. Thanks for joining us, listeners. If you have a top five list that that you want to share with us, share it with us. We'd like to talk about it at some point. Back soon with another episode. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.